Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
The model that many biotech companies are following now is to develop a drug that is very effective and to price it at a high level. But as these prices increase, the boom could very well create the conditions for its own undoing by prompting social and political action.
That's MIT biology historian Robin Scheffler. He's pointing out a conundrum at the heart of the Massachusetts biotech revolution. Each year brings stunning new treatments for rare and common diseases, some are even cures, and each carries a jaw-dropping price tag. So today in WBUR's special series called BioBoom, correspondent Richard Knox looks at proposals to make million-dollar miracle cures more affordable while sustaining the BioBoom.
Jack Hogan was born with an extremely rare genetic defect, so he's never been able to see much in dim light. And at the age of 13, he faced the certain prospect of going totally blind in his 20s. But this spring, a Boston eye specialist injected 3 drops of a precious liquid into each of Jack Hogan's eyes. They contain billions of copies of a gene Jack needs for his eyes to convert light into sight. 27 days later, Jack got the thrill of his life.
It was like 7:30. It was like a little dim out. And that's normally when I go in. And so I went to go get pizza with my friend. I left from the pizza place around 8:30, 9, and it was pitch black out. And I rode my bike home all by myself. Like, I've never rode my bike at all at night. And now I can. I'm gonna go so fast. I feel like a new kid.
Now Jack can see 3 times better in dim light than before. In daylight, for the first time, he can see what his teacher writes on the classroom whiteboard. The treatment that restored Jack's eyesight is called Luxturna, and it costs $850,000. And that's just for the drug alone. Dr. Peter Bach runs the drug pricing lab at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York.
If you treat one person with Luxturna, you've spent as much money that year as you would have spent covering 32 families of 4 with commercial insurance.
So how do companies set prices? I asked Jeff Morazzo, the CEO of Spark Therapeutics, how his company priced Luxturna.
Yeah, what I can say is that we ultimately tried to answer the question, what is the value of sight in a young child who has a substantial portion of their life in front of them?
Spark figured in the lifetime earnings that patients would lose if they weren't treated, and they looked at what courts have awarded plaintiffs who've lost their sight.
When you look out over a lifetime, the value of sight is worth more than $1 million.
But the company wanted to avoid the optics of a $1 million price tag.
Because we heard concerns from patients about access and from payers about budgetary impact, but we also had to consider how and what price would allow us to work and reinvest in other gene therapies that could help patients with other diseases.
In the end, Spark decided $850,000 per treatment was enough. Some point out that genetic disorders like Jack Hogan's are so rare that treating them is a drop in the ocean of our $3.5 trillion health system. It's the sum total of all the million-dollar miracle cures that's worrying many in biotech and beyond, including Bob Coughlin, president of the Massachusetts Biotechnology Council.
My opinion is that if our industry doesn't change our behavior, somebody in government's going to be forced to do it for us. And as a former person that sat in government, you can't expect an elected official to have the experience and the knowledge to fix this the right way. It's too complicated.
That's Bob Coughlin, president of the Massachusetts Biotechnology Council there, in that story from WBUR correspondent Richard Knox. So new drug therapies can be so-called million-dollar miracles, but as Dick Knox asked in that piece, can our healthcare system support these costs? Well, there's momentum building around a new model, getting drug prices to align with the benefits patients receive. It's called value-based pricing, and the movement is led by the Boston-based nonprofit. It's called ICER, the Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, and they consider themselves a drug pricing watchdog. And Dr. Stephen Pearson is ICER's president, and he joins us now. Dr. Pearson, welcome.
Thank you very much, Megan. Nice to be with you.
It's good to have you. So I wonder if you could just briefly explain in a little bit more detail, value-based pricing, what is it and how do you go about determining it?
Sure. Well, as you can imagine, there are different ways to think about what a reasonable or fair price is. Some people believe it should just be left to the market all by itself with supply and demand. But the way that we have the drug market set up with patents and the inability of insurers to walk away from the table really sets up a need to think more in different ways about how we price things. So you can think about pricing by trying to calculate how much it costs to do the research to create the drug and then to make the drug and deliver it. Mm-hmm. But that often doesn't really work well because it could be that it's a fantastic drug and it does great things for patients, but it's really inexpensive. And we wouldn't honestly be giving enough of an incentive and enough of a return to companies if we priced that way for brand new drugs. So value-based pricing means this simply. It means to really think about how much the evidence can demonstrate that a new drug improves the lives of patients. And it can do that by lengthening the life of patients and or by improving the quality of that life, like the drug that was just described to treat blindness. And there are ways to capture that through asking patients and doing surveys, looking at the evidence on the outcomes from the studies that are done to get drugs through the FDA. And then you scale a price by how much better it is than what we can currently do. And you scale it in some way by how wealthy a society we are. So we all know that we are the wealthiest society and we should pay mm-hmm. a lot for healthcare mm-hmm. and certainly for great new innovations. But ultimately, resources are limited in some yeah. way. So if we can scale the price in a more proportional fashion, we think we can do a better job of distinguishing when we're getting a great value and when we're frankly getting ripped off.
So in the example of the drug that Dick Knox was talking about in his piece that helped the young Jack Hogan regain some of his sight, you did this value-based pricing around it. And if I remember correctly, the cost that you came up with was half of what the company that developed the drug wanted to charge for it.
That's right. That's right. And again,
so from 800,000 to 400,000.
From 800,000 to 400,000. And that opens up a large conversation, obviously. But up until recently, there has been no other voice other than the manufacturer when they come out with a drug. They get to set their price. So every time we celebrate a brand new drug, we shouldn't forget what else happens on that day. The company gets to name its price. And obviously, if there's competition, there are some features that they have to think about in terms of how insurers will cover it. But for some of the greatest new developments in biotech, they will come out without any real competition. And so the sky's the limit unless we come up with a better way to talk about it. So our assessment of how much better, and it is great when you hear the stories of children like Jack, but he's not the average patient. You have to kind of look over, you know, the entire spectrum of how patients respond to these treatments because we are going to come up with a single price. It has to reflect the average.
Yeah.
And you look at how well it helps them and we put out a number and then we bring the public and the insurers and others together to talk about it because ultimately, again, we have to figure out a new way forward if we are going to be able to sustain the kinds of innovations
right.
that Luxturna represents.
Well, let me just very briefly welcome in just another voice to this conversation, just to get a response from the industry itself. This is Randy Burkholder. He's Vice President of Policy and Research at PhRMA, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, the trade and lobbying group. Randy Burkholder, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So you just heard what Dr. Steve Pearson said. I mean, what's your take? Does the pharmaceutical industry see some possibility in value-based pricing?
Well, I think we absolutely see a lot of opportunity in organizing our healthcare system to make sure that we are doing a good job delivering better value to patients. And that's not just for drugs, but that's across the entire healthcare system. And one of the reasons we do think that is important is because we are at such an exciting time in the science and in translating that science into better treatments and potentially even cures, like we heard for Jack, often for very small patient populations. So that's an important challenge. That's the right challenge to have. How do we make sure that we can get breakthroughs and potentially cures to patients and make sure that we can afford them? And we think that's a problem that we can solve when you step back and look at the fact that FDA approved an unprecedented number of highly innovative mm-hmm. targeted therapies last year, including gene therapies, combined with the fact that our spending on drugs overall in the U.S. went up by less than 1% last year. this is a problem we have the tools to solve. We think tools for looking at value are going to be part of the solution for that. But we think
can I just jump in here for a second? Because I want to, because I think the fundamental new thinking here is that, as Dr. Pearson said a little earlier, that perhaps should we be moving to a system where the cost is not solely determined by the needs and ambitions of the manufacturers themselves, but rather the benefit to the economy, individuals, et cetera, but that whole idea of proportionately scaling the cost to what the country, the economy can bear. Is there room for that?
Well, let me start by saying I don't think there is any sector in healthcare that is more proportionally scaled to deliver value right now than the biopharmaceutical research sector. I think that is in part because we face an incredible amount of competitive pressure in the market, as Steve was alluding to, and often shortly after one drug is approved, a competitor is approved, and at the end of the day, every treatment is going to face competition from generics or now biosimilars. So we introduce products into a market where we face a tremendous amount of competitive pressure already, and that's one of the reasons why drug spending overall is projected to only go up 2-5% a year over the next 5 years. So we think getting better value tools and better accountability around value, yes, that's part of the answer. We don't think ICER and the methods that it has are well aligned with what patients in the healthcare system need or the U.S. healthcare system needs, but we do think those tools do need to be developed.
Right. Well, I'm running out of time here, so I want to turn back to Steve Pearson. We've just got about a minute left to go, Dr. Pearson, and I apologize to both of you for that. It always goes by very quickly. But so ICER is a nonprofit, an independent nonprofit group that's doing this. Are you getting any traction in terms of the thinking, the methodology here that you have?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And in many ways, this is the kind of work that goes on amongst academics and health systems around the world. We're a very different health system, but we're getting traction with Medicaid programs who are starting to use our reports to help solidify their own thinking about the clinical effectiveness and fair pricing. New York Medicaid has recently used it to actually help set a target for a fair price in negotiations with a company based in Boston, Vertex. And in the commercial market, again, they're starting to use them and even to think about better ways that they can weave them into the health benefit design so that they really can work with the pharmaceutical industry. Because I disagree with Mr. Burkholder. I think there are too many times when competition doesn't bring us the prices we need, and it ends up hurting patients.
Well, that's Dr. Steve Pearson. He's president of the Institute of Clinical and Economic Review, or ICER. Dr. Pearson, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
And we also heard from Randy Burkholder, Vice President of Policy and Research at PhRMA, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America Trade and Lobbying Group. Randy Burkholder, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And by the way, we've got links to all the great coverage in WBUR's BioBoom series. It's at radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.